sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and happy new year. You are listening to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move with Becky Ivins, who is broker of Movers Real Estate and leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team. And I want to wish a happy new year to Mike Gannon, who puts our show together every week and does a great job, and to Ron Shalott, attorney at law, my personal attorney and corporate attorney. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, and this really is a live program because we're looking out. There's snow on the ground from the other day, and a little bit of flurries coming down yet this morning when we were driving in. So, yeah, this is a live show here. We're here on the second day, 42 days into January.
I know. Did you notice on the way in down Northwest Expressway all the trees that were broken? That's not remnants of the last storm, I don't think, is it?
Well, maybe we're noticing them because of the white of the snow.
Maybe that's it. But, man, there were a lot of limbs that were broken down Northwest Highway.
See a lot more detail. Looking out the window here at the studio, I see a lot of detail I didn't see last week when I was here because of the whiteness of the snow with the darker branches and the figures and everything. So it's really, really pretty out, but still a little bit of fun coming in. Here we are.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. I haven't seen you since last year.
I know, right? I told Ron on the way up the elevator that the last time I was in my car was last week for the show.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I know. We just don't get out that much anymore. It's nice that we can work from home.
True.
I did a lot of work from home this week because I can help value properties and help people figure out a plan, even from my home office.
Well, you drug me out for the first time this year.
Yeah, there you go. Oh,
just to see you.
Okay, well, it's good to see you too, Ron. Okay. Ron, I'm going to, if someone wants to find you, I have people all the time. Yours is the only card I carry in my purse other than my own because people do ask for it. And it is Shalott Falsetti, and the telephone number is, of course, it's 405, but it's 528-2890. To find Ron's number or any of my favorite number, you just go to BeckyIvins.com. There's a tab that says Becky's Favorites, and just go down that, and there, it's not a long list, but it's a very good list of folks that can help you. So.
Yep, our firm is a German and an Italian.
So, there you go.
We used to have an Irishman with us too, but
oh, did you?
He passed away, so that's no longer. So, just the two of us now. But we've been together for, 40 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
Long time.
Well, we're talking each time about this year. Toward the end of the year, or the beginning of the new year, we talk about the nuances of the law, how it's been interpreted, and how it relates to real estate and real estate transactions. Last week, we covered, I think, three different things. And can you just review them for us real quick?
Sure, real fast. Last week, we looked at the concept that if one spouse transfers property to that spouse and transfer the property to that person and the person's spouse. I'll do it the easy way. Husband transfers property to husband and wife without the wife signing the deed. The question was, is that a valid transfer? Because as we've said before, if one spouse transfers property that's just in their own name without the other spouse signing it in Oklahoma, that causes a problem with the deed and couldn't valid the deed. But in this case, because the husband was transferring it to himself and to his wife, the court said this is an exception to that rule that both husband and wife must sign, and so it was a valid deed and a valid transfer. That was one. The second thing had to do with a transfer on death deed, which, of course, is relatively new. If the transfer on death deed is not timely accepted, by the beneficiary, by the intended beneficiary, then it expires. You have to do it within 9 months. And then it goes into that person's estate. And the question there was, goes into the person's estate, so does it go under the will as a specific bequest or the general residuary clause, which is the everything else, the kind of safety net thing? And the court ruled that it actually does go into the specific bequest, despite the fact that the person did not accept it as a transfer on death deed transfer. So that was the two cases that we were looking at last year. Last week. Then we looked at a case on what was called pretermitted heir, a.k.a. the forgotten heir or forgotten children case. And last week we were looking at a matter where a person did not provide for a child in their will, and the child was saying, hey, wait a second, he didn't provide for me in his life insurance or his bank account as well. I should also get my share of those. However, the court ruled there that you can give away your property during your lifetime, and those are not subject to the pretermitted heir rule. So if you had a situation like a transfer on death deed or a pay-on-death clause on a bank account or a beneficiary pay-on-death clause in an IRA or life insurance, that does not come within the pretermitted heir rule because that only covers with wills or intestate succession. Well, it wouldn't cover intestate succession because you're not forgotten, but with a will. So that's what we were looking at last week as to the different things. And this week, the first one we'll be looking at kind of goes along with that same pretermitted heir idea, but it has to do with a little nuance in it. We had a child placed for adoption, and the question was whether they qualify as a pretermitted heir, and they do. That's been a long doctrine in Oklahoma. Just a false statement in a will that the person doesn't have children does not automatically disinherit them. Instead, you have to look more specifically at their reasoning for that. So you really need to specifically state if you want to disinherit someone in a will. Yet, in this particular case, we had a child who was given up for adoption, and a child who's given for adoption is entitled to inherit from both biological parents and adoptive parents.
Really?
So you do have a situation where a child who's adopted does have that right. So as a individual who has given up a child for adoption, if you want to disinherit them, you have to specifically disinherit them in the will. You can't just ignore them because that would make them a forgotten child or pretermitted child. At least that's what we were looking at in this particular case that came out I believe it was in May of 2020, May of last year. Now, there was some situation in there where the person actually had the testamentary capacity to sign a will. They're going to go into surgery. They talked to a lawyer, but really didn't talk to the lawyer and sit down and go over drafts, things of that nature. So it was a situation where there was an ambiguity existed and some evidence was taken as to whether she really intended to disinherit the child or not. And so that led to that kind of
litigation. Do you know what's kind of frustrating about the law sometimes to me is that if a judge has to decide on this and it's real evident by what the intent of the party is that wrote that will or that, you know, the, what do you call it, the deceased?
Yeah. The testator wrote the will, yeah.
Okay, well, but the wording is such to where it does not fit the law. Does the judge just have to go by the law instead of what was pretty evident was meant by it?
That's a loaded question, and I'm glad you asked that question because we're going to have a situation come up here soon in 2021. The Oklahoma Supreme Court is going to decide a case that has to do with a holographic will. But with a normal, everyday will that you have pre-prepared, signed, witness, that kind of thing, you look at what the intent of the testator was in the will, but there are certain statutes that can override that. The pretermitted heir statute, for example, can override that. Because it's a forgotten child, and the courts, the legislature has directed the courts to protect children who may have been forgotten in the will. even though they weren't provided for during their lifetime. And so we have a statute that goes on that lines, and the court does indeed enforce that.
Well, we're going to cover a lot more when we return. Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins welcoming you to the new year of 2021. Going to be a good year. Actually, 2020 was a good year in real estate across the country. And we're talking about real estate and laws that kind of have affected real estate, some changes, some nuances in the law. And I have with me Ron Shalott, who is my attorney, and he can be your attorney too if you want to give him a call at 528-2890. Ron, let's continue on where we were, the Supreme Court.
Yep, the Oklahoma Supreme Court generally holds that if you've got the pretermitted heir, the forgotten heir, that there's statute that they will enforce. The question always is, were they indeed forgotten in the will? And you do have to, in a formalized will, you do need to specifically state children, who you're giving stuff to, not giving stuff to, that kind of thing. We do have a case up before the Oklahoma Supreme Court that they should be deciding sometime in the next few months that have to do with the holographic will. The holographic will is the all handwritten will. It's dated, signed, all in handwriting. It's not witnessed or notarized. But those wills are a little different than your formalized will, obviously. You don't have a lawyer preparing them. You don't have the witness of the notary. And there's a question that, actually, I have a case up for the Supreme Court right now pending as to whether a holographic will has to follow the forgotten heir, the pretermitted heir statute. And that's a really interesting case because if they rule it does, then there's a lot of holographic wills that might just be invalidated. On the other hand, if they don't, then that can also be a nuance in the law that we'll see how they rule on that particular case. So it should be coming up here pretty soon and should be interesting to see how the Supreme Court rules on that case.
Now, on a holographic will, which is like a video, right?
No, holographic will is all handwritten.
Oh.
All in writing, dated, and signed.
What makes it holographic then?
It's written, graphic.
Oh, okay.
Self-written will, basically, is what you're talking about. So we're not talking about hologram, but holographic will.
Oh, okay.
So holographic will, it's all in the testator's handwriting.
I see.
Dated and signed.
Okay.
It's not witnessed, doesn't have to be witnessed, doesn't have to be notarized. Sometimes they are notarized. But it does have to be in their handwriting, and that's or in writing, and usually it's handwriting. So that's what we look at to determine whether or not there is a holographic will. Is it in the person's handwriting, or did somebody else write it for them and they just sign, you know, things of that nature? And so that's a type of will that is very dangerous. But the idea for those, you have to remember Oklahoma was a frontier state, and a lot of people didn't have access to lawyers or justice of the peace, et cetera. And consequently, things were kind of done by the, should we say, law of the West? I don't know. But anyway, it developed whereby a person could hand write out the will and not have to have it formally witnessed, because you may not be able to find witnesses or a notary. You may not be able to find a notary, and you may not have a lawyer to draft it for you. So it's a way to validate a person's last testament or last will and testament by handwritten will. But it comes from our, you know, our kind of a Western culture of being a frontier state, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I had a parent who died with a holographic will, and another one that died with a written will. I mean, like
the
typewritten yeah. will, but also a video recording.
Video recordings can be interesting because in my experience, I know some lawyers are doing them to try to prove testamentary capacity of the person was alert, awake, that kind of thing. Sometimes those can be a bit misleading, though. I mean, pictures can be misleading. Videos can be misleading. So consequently, they are things that could be trouble.
It was set aside in favor of the typewritten will.
Well, the holographic will work until it's superseded. Another will comes along and replaces it. But Oklahoma, as I said, we do have some interesting laws in that regard with regard to things that people can do without some formalization. For example, common law marriage. We've talked about that before as well. It does indeed exist. In fact, there was a case that came out in June, an estate case that said, again, common law marriage does still exist in Oklahoma. Some people try to say it doesn't. There's a statute that has to do with marriage licensing that some are trying to say, well, that is ended common law marriage, but it has not. It's still present. It requires a meeting of the minds and an actual mutual agreement. There's going to be a permanent relationship. You know, it's just not a hit or miss thing, an exclusive relationship, cohabitation as spouses, we should say it that way, and hold themselves out as married. But those are ways that you can prove a common law marriage. And as we've talked about now for the last couple of years, that with the same-sex marriage issue, you could have a same-sex common law marriage. There's nothing that prevents that. Why is that important with real estate? Well, if you hold real property in your name singularly and you do establish this marital relationship, now you've got a marital interest in that property. And that can affect your real property, your estate, how things are transferred. So you really have to be aware of that situation. And even if two people are just residing together in a house, for example, now the question comes up, well, were they common law married or not?
Or were they just roommates?
Or just roommates. Just friends with benefits.
Yes, but the fact that if they hold themselves out as a married couple in public, then I guess you would have to have testimony on
yes,
that?
Yes. Well, it was kind of interesting. A few years ago, I had a trial in a probate court as to whether common law marriage existed. And that was an issue because, you know, what you have to remember or be aware of, if you're much younger, is that even like high school kids will, you know, kind of talk about, instead of boyfriend, girlfriend, they'll talk about, oh, my husband or my wife, you know, that kind of thing. They use different terminology for relationships than we used to use back when I was in high school. And this was a younger couple that we had the situation as to whether it was a common law marriage. And that was one of the arguments as I use is that, well, younger people all the time are talking about boyfriend or girlfriend as, oh, my hubby or my wife. But they don't really mean it the way that we mean it or we mean it in law. But using those words can be quite important. And as to whether or not that can create a marriage or not, well, it could cause a question.
Cause question on who owns the property, the real property, right?
Especially if one person passes away or if not, I mean, you can get into that situation as to, hey, we were married. You can't just give that away. But there is no such thing as common law divorce, so you actually have to file a divorce action, and you could. There have been divorce actions dealing with common law marriage and whether or not the marriage indeed existed.
That really comes into play, Ron, when we have a common law spouse and only one person entitled to the property, say the husband is entitled to the property, but is common law married, then does the common law spouse have to sign the deed?
That's where you get into a situation, and we get into issues as to sign the deed, or if the person passes away, who's the heir, especially if you would have kids, for example?
Right.
Does the spouse, if there's no will, and the putative spouse, the purported spouse says, "Hey, I'm the spouse there, and you've got the kids." Well, under intestate succession, your surviving spouse can have one half of the property. The other half goes to children. So it can be a substantial situation that impacts your real property.
What happens if the spouse is living there, but the kids get half the property?
Well, they still have the right to stay in there. The court's not going to throw them out, but would give the kids the right to the proceeds in the end.
Okay. Boy, it can get complicated, right?
It can get very complicated when you get into these relationships that are not well defined.
And you have stepchildren, half siblings. There's a lot to really cover on that. We're gonna dive into it when we return with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, and we are, I believe, you're listening to the longest-running real estate-focused talk show in Oklahoma. So thank you for doing
that.
Yeah, well, thank you for doing that. And we love to give you good information. That's why we're here. And today I have Attorney Ron Shalott, who's going over how some of the rulings of the court have affected our real estate law this year and some of the little nuances of what has happened. So it's time now.
Come on, baby, tell me what's the word. I word up. Everybody say, when you hear the call, you've got to get it underway.
It is time for our word of the day, proudly brought to you by Robbins Roofing. Robbins Roofing's word every day is trust. That you can trust Robbins Roofing for a small repair, a whole roof. They tore off a roof for me recently that needed to be replaced, and there was lots of decking that needed to be replaced. And rather than just, you know, throw something up there, they called and consulted, FaceTimed me, showed me the pictures, and let me make a decision on how to move forward with this property and how to do the roof. And I said, what's the right way to do the roof, Larry? And he said, well, the right way would be to put new decking on this, but your insurance will not pay for that. I said, well, I'm selling this property, so I have to do the right thing. So put the decking on there. And but it was nice because he showed me the pictures and let me know. So Robbins Roofing, I trust them. You can too. 728-3700. It's 728-3700. Ron Shalott, what's our word of the day?
Word of the day is air.
Air.
We talked about air. We'll talk about air. Now, air, this is air like H-E-I-R, air. Not air like the air that you breathe and not air like, ooh, I dropped a pass. That's an error. No, this is air.
Right. So
English can do that to us. And that's why people who don't speak English as a first language have problems learning English. And if we complain about learning foreign languages in school, we shouldn't complain because English is just as bad. But air is our word of the day, H-E-I-R. It actually comes from the Middle English, air. E-Y-R-E, or sometimes spelled E-I-R, and came to us via Latin, which is herod, which means the kinsman inheriting property of a person without close relatives. Nowadays, an heir is the one who inherits, that obtains the property or title. Inherits the property is an heir. Used to be back in the old days, it was formerly the sons were your heir. Your son would inherit the property. There was a patriarchal society for quite some time that didn't look at the women as anything but ownership property, etc. So they'd always go for a son, so they would have an heir to inherit their property. And sometimes, in some cultures, the eldest son got two times and the younger son just got the one share. The eldest son got the two times, and sometimes the eldest son got it all. The concept of heirship is that inheriting or the receiving of property when an individual dies or passes away.
What, don't you have to like publish something to be sure that there are no heirs that are being left out?
Well, when we do a probate, we do file an action with the court. Requires us to notify the beneficiaries that are in a will, if there's a will, in addition to the heirs at law. The heirs at law would be those people who would take under a situation where there was no will, where there was intestate succession. The reason for that would be just in case the will is not admitted to probate, if it is invalidated, then you have to look to see who would the beneficiaries be. And an heir at law may have a challenge to a will. Say the will gave everything I own to the Society for the Protection of Gerbils, for example, and my children were not happy with that disposition of all my wealth, of all the $250 I got left in my pocket. And so they challenge it in court as to whether that will was valid. Maybe they think that someone with the Gerbil Society might have convinced me, coerced me to change my will and to disinherit my children. So the heirs at law would have a basis to challenge. And we do notify them specifically by mailing to them at their last known address. Also, we do publish it as well in the county where the action is brought.
People do some strange things with their wills. Yesterday I watched a strange inheritance TV show, and one of the things that was put in the will of Harry Houdini was that they would, I guess he left money for this, to have a seance trying to conjure him up once a year.
Yes, he wanted to determine whether or not, at least this is what I understood, whether or not the metaphysical realm did exist, spirits, those kind of things. So he set that up to try to find that out. Now, whether he was trying to debunk it or trying to see whether it actually worked or not, I don't know. I didn't look at it that closely or know him, but there are some that try to debunk that. And so they'll say, yeah, we'll require this, and that'll show that either it does happen or it doesn't happen. And consequently, you get some weird things in a will that way, and you set it up. You can set it up as a trust to do that.
Well, that was another thing that they commented on, was Leona Helmsley left the little people that she, you know, who I'm
yes.
talking about?
Yes.
Okay. She left a $12 million trust for her little pet dog. Now, what happens to that once the dog's dead?
Well, there are things called pet trusts.
Oh, my gosh.
And that is a kind of a unique area where people set that up. We do actually create those, a trust for the pet. And, yes, there is a clause as what happens if the pet dies, but how you have the trustee who takes care of the pet, how do you make sure that the pet's well taken care of, what perimeters are in the trust in terms of what can be spent on the pet, those types of things. Yeah, it's quite interesting.
You know, here in Oklahoma City, actually it was Edmond, I listed a property a few years ago where the person that died had left everything to his dogs. And he had a house that was paid for, and the brother had to start taking care of these. And so the money was gone, the dogs were dead, and there really were not provisions in this will. So he had to still go to court to get permission to sell the property.
Well, if you get that situation, since a animal cannot be a testator, they can't create their own will, so they can't dispose of it beyond themselves. Consequently, you look at the gift, and if the gift then expires, then you'd have to go to a court, and basically you have an intestate succession at that particular point. There's an intestacy created because the gift is no longer valid. And that kind of falls into last week what we were talking about. We were talking about, you know, trust holding real property and whether or not the property is in the trust or not. That's a problem you mentioned last week that you see more, and I've seen it quite a bit.
I see it a lot.
And that brings up a challenge, by the way. That brings up a challenge. We tell people, check your trust. Make sure your real property is in your trust. Let's challenge people today. If you got a trust today, tomorrow, before the weekend's out, go to your trust. Look and see, is the real property placed into your trust? Is it there a deed? Is it filed of record? Look at it today. And if you look at it and you find out it's not, get it done ASAP. Get it done with your estate planning lawyer. Go back to the lawyer and get it done. Call me if you need it done. Call Becky, and she'll get a hold of me to get it done ASAP so we can get this thing done. Now, because we have set that challenge out to the people, if they find out they haven't done it and then they fix it and they are grateful to us for bringing this to their attention, I'd like to challenge them to send you, say $10 for the Warriors for Freedom. A little challenge to say, hey, in gratitude, Becky, for finding out the information in your program, here's $10 to go to your favorite charity, which is Warriors for Freedom. And that way everybody benefits, plus the individual who fixes what was missed benefits from that as well.
Yeah, that is a great local charity, an Oklahoma charity that is in good standing, and our whole family supports that charity. And that's a great thing, Ron. Thank you.
Yeah, well, we'll save their estate plan that way and make sure their will gets done the way they want it to get done, and also get the money to charity as well.
There you go. And you can give more than $10 if you want to. Get a head start on 2021 with your charitable giving. Mr. Gannon, let's take us to a break, and we're going to return with a wrap-up and our smoking hot deal right after this on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate and leader of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team. And we appreciate that you would listen to our show and maybe get a little bit more up to date on things. Ron, take it.
Well, we had a challenge here at the end of the other segment, challenge number one, which is if you have a trust, check today and make sure that if your real property is supposed to be in the trust, that your real property was deeded into that trust, signed, notarized, filed.
Filed, and it hasn't been filed, you can't file it.
Right. So you want to check that all out. So if you got a trust, check that today. That is your challenge number one if you have a trust. Challenge number two for those who don't have any of that, if you have no will, no trust, no transfer and death deed, get it done now. Get it done now. This is a great time to do it, to get your estate plan in order. Sometimes people do not have estate plans that are well-defined. You mentioned that, and we need to have these defined because if you become incapacitated or if you pass away, we need to know what you wanted. And the law provides opportunities, instruments, vehicles to do that. So we need to get that done. And if it goes into a trust, then we need to make sure that the trust has the property, and then we can figure out what the trust is supposed to do with the property. If it's by will, is it going to an individual or persons? Or are you going to direct it to be sold and then the proceeds of it get distributed out to people? And if you have that will and you mandate that it be sold, then it must be sold. So you really need to look at those things, and that's the second challenge that we put out there today for people to start 2021.
So get your affairs in order,
Get your affairs in order, yes.
And it's not as daunting as it seems.
No, we make it easy. If you go to an estate planning lawyer, a lawyer who does this type of work, we try to make it very simple. I go over a lot of stuff at our initial meeting in terms of the different vehicles that are available, whether or not you're looking at this for a tax reason or if you're looking at it just to transfer assets or if there's some other reason involved, whether you even want to do a trust or even you can even do multiple trusts. You don't have to do just one. You can do more than one because they're private and you can keep your matters private away from family members or away from the public eye. Or if you just want to go simplistically with a will, and that way we can probate it and make sure that what you want to have done is indeed done and done the way you want it. And that's what's important.
Well, that's why you have a will to start with, so things get done the way you want them done.
That's why it's called a last will and testament.
And testament.
And testament, your testimony. That's correct. And
now, do we have another law case that we need to talk about?
Well, just real briefly on this next one, it's actually a little more famous. It came out from the U.S. Supreme Court, which was the McGirt case that has been in the papers a lot. It was actually a criminal case, and it has to do with whether the state could prosecute in a criminal matter an Indian, an Native American in a state court. Went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court looked at it and decided, no, the state couldn't prosecute it because that individual's tribe was not disestablished. So still an established tribe and those type of things. Oklahoma, we do have an Indian law group, and consequently the Indian laws do impact real property, can impact states. If you have Indian heritage, those types of things. So those are things, again, we need to take into account, and especially with the McGirt case, which was a criminal law case, but there are some of us that are wondering, can this also get into things such as oil and gas, mineral interests, civil law, real property interests? So there are situations that we are now looking at more closely than perhaps we did before. And that is something that is changing, that's becoming a little more complex. And until the laws become more established as to how these work. And so that's something we need to be very familiar with, especially in Oklahoma.
So if you own property, we call it real property, right?
It's real property, yes. That's not that everything else is unreal property. It's just the difference between real property and personal property.
And real property, that there's a whole another subject on that. It really means like owning the land, right?
The land, your home, the things that are affixed on the land, which could be a mobile home that is affixed, it's not mobile, a garage or other building that's affixed on the land. That's all part of real property. In Oklahoma, mineral interests are considered real property interests. They're not personal property. Consequently, you have to transfer those via a deed as opposed to just signing an agreement over those kind of things. But that's real property, the land and anything affixed on it, home, that kind of thing. Everything else is personal property. Personal property are things that you have an interest in, your car, your bank account, your toys, your clothes, your jewelry. And then there are the types of personal property that are intangible personal property, things you have a right to, such as a right to a copyright or a trademark. Items of that nature that are not tangible, that you can't really hold on to, but you do have a right to them.
When you... I know you did my will, and I'm trying to remember what was said about, like, passwords to, like, social media, that kind of thing.
Well, that's important in not only wills but in durable powers of attorney, that your personal representative have access to your social media accounts, your passwords, passwords to bank accounts, to your phone. The lock code in your phone, if you get on the different kind of social medias, all those accounts, if you can't find the passwords to those or anything else you have a password to on the internet, you although Oklahoma does have a law that allows a personal representative access to that, it's good to put that into the will. However, if you have a durable power of attorney, you have to decide if you want your agent, your attorney in fact, to have that access, because there is no law in Oklahoma that automatically grants that. Consequently, you will want to put that into your durable power of attorney if you want them to have that kind of access. For example, if you're incapacitated, do you want your agent, your attorney in fact, to have access to your phone, to shut down your social media accounts or control those, get into bank accounts, the electronic age, those kind of things?
There's a lot to estate planning. And if you guys want to find how to contact Ron Shalott, I'll give you the phone number. It is 528-2890. And just go to BeckyIvins.com and look under Becky's Favorites. It's a little tab toward the right-hand side of the page. And we appreciate you coming in. And next week, we're going to have Larry Robbins on, who is going to talk to us about the different types of roof and whether or not you should do a repair or replace your roof, and what's the determining factors there. We're going to talk about impact resistant, class 3, class 4, lots of things on roofing. Well, thank you, Ron. Happy New Year.
Thank you.